Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Mana Spike Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Cias. With me, as always, are my wonderful co-hosts, Adrian Lopez.
Sup, peeps?
William Hendricks.
Was that an Easter pun you made?
God, how'd you already know?
That was
so predictable.
I have peeps from last year sitting on my table right
that
now.
That is disgusting, but they're chocolate too, so they're completely like, preserved.
They're chocolate, so they look like poops, so I call them poops.
And for those of you listening, you may or may not have noticed that our good buddy Jay Ancatel is not here. We're sad to announce that he is no longer going to be with us on this podcast moving forward. We are saddened by his departure, but we wish him the best of luck in all his future endeavors. But we do have some great news. We have a new host joining us moving forward. His name is Ed Green. Welcome, Ed.
Hey, guys.
Is that all you got? Just hey, guys?
I got a hi and a hello.
I love him. It's going to be a good fit.
Keeper, sign him up.
I already hate him. Get him gone.
All right, Ed, tell us a little bit about yourself. How old are you? What do you do for a living? How long have you been playing Magic? What kind of decks do you like to play? What are your goals and aspirations for the game?
What's your pant size?
Give it all out, except for your pant size.
Except for my pant
size. With particular focus on the pant size.
All right. I am a 28-year-old Magic player. I am the general manager of Domino's Pizza here in Las Cruces. Deck types, I am a control player at heart. I like to jam counter spells and card draw. That's my jam.
There's so many damn control players on this podcast.
That's a good thing.
That is a good thing. So for those of you who are listening that aren't from around the area, Ed has been a notable player in the local area that has been traveling to a lot of events, and I've been taking notice of him and his finishes. And I feel like he would be a perfect addition to our show here. So welcome, Ed. Thank you for coming.
Thanks. happy to be here.
All right. So let's go on. What did you guys do this weekend? What kind of what magical things did you do? What tournaments did you play in? Lay it all on me, man.
I'll go first because age. Wait, no. Beauty before age. Does that make sense?
That's not how that goes.
Definitely yeah. Not in your case, it doesn't.
Well, thanks, guys. You're all so great to me. I played Magic this weekend. It was fun. I got smashed by Eric in Modern because I decided to 3-for-1 myself. It was so good. What about you, Ed?
Well, I also played Magic this week. 3-1 to Daily on Magic the Gathering Online. I was going away from my norm, and I played Mono Red. I went 3-1 in that. I also got smashed by Eric in the Modern event.
You're a dick, Eric.
I got a smash if I want to win.
Smash. I'll get revenge.
And I spent the rest of the week testing out some Esper for New Standard.
He's been over, I think, almost like every night. We've been testing pretty hard.
Ooh.
That sounds cool. So, Will, what have you been up to?
I have been enjoying what's left of the Modo Cube, and I have also been playtesting Esper for this next format.
Everyone's testing the Esper.
Not me. I've been on Jeskai.
We have an Esper problem.
No, man. It's the Jeskai. You got to go to the Jeskai way. It's so good now. Anticipate.
Are you just going to race card us now?
The Jeskai way? No, man. Anticipate is so good.
Anticipate is really good, and I'll talk about it in a moment. So I want to tell you all what I did. So Thursday, I decided to go play Modern at my local game store, and you guys were so kind to show up. Round one, I get paired up against Ed, and I'm playing the Sultai Control, the same list that Gerardo Fabiano played. I am so close to finishing out my list. All I'm missing are a couple of fetch lands and my set of Tarmogoyfs, which I'm waiting for Modern Masters to come out and pick those up. But I was able to borrow everything else, and I was playing the deck, and I love it. I just love that deck so much. So round one, I get paired up against Ed. He's on blue, white, red control, and I'm playing him, and it was a really heated match because Ed is a good control player, and it was a lot of back and forth, but I was able to clinch the win. I got there, and then in top eight, Adrian, where I faced you, or in top four?
Top four.
Okay. So I make it to top eight, I go X01, drawing in my last round to make top eight, and then I win my top eight match. Then in top four, I face Adrian, who's on green, white, what's that deck called? Yeah, Hate Bears. I don't even know what that deck's called. All I know is I beat it.
Oh, shit, man. Dude, well, so, that deck is so fun.
To be fair, like, game one was not very... Actually, game one was pretty close, but game two was not very close at all because you were stuck on one land, and then it was the wrong color land, and you were forced to ghost quarter your own land, and it just everything was just kind of awkward.
So what I did was, I don't recommend doing this. So the way I see it is I kind of either look like a genius or an idiot. I just look like an idiot instead, though, because you brought.
That's never happened before.
Hey, shut up, Will. I looked great in my head, and that's all that matters, right?
And you
looked. I mean, you were like looking at like seven spells, no land, and then you're like, "Man, if this works, everyone's gonna be like, you're so good at magic, Adrian." It's like rationalized. You're like 50-50 chance, right? Either I'm good at magic or I'm not. So I guess I should keep. I like those odds.
I wanted to have a good story for us this week. Anyways, I think I played a Plains or something. Yeah, it was a Plains. I had to ghost quarter my planes because I did not get the mana I needed to pull out a forest so that I could play my noble high arc. And then Eric disfigured me and I lost.
That's true, I did.
So I think I technically 3-for-1'd myself?
Yes, and I appreciated the free win.
Yeah, you're welcome, jerk.
So for the second time of me playing Modern with this deck, I was able to split in the finals, so I think the Sultai deck is very, very strong. Not a lot of bad matchups for that deck. I'll continue to play it, especially since, you know, like I said earlier, I'm picking up all the pieces for it. I think it's really good and very well positioned in the format, but I want to talk about Standard. So I did not play in FNM this week, but I did play in my local box tournaments on Saturday and Sunday, respectively. And in both tournaments, I ran Esper Control. The list that I ran was the exact 75 that Shaheen Sirani took to the Invitational. He was kind enough to post it on his Facebook page. He talked about it on the A-Team podcast. He also posted it in an article that came out the day of the Invitational and talked about, you know, the strategy and everything for it. So me being a control player at heart, I had to go with it. So I did the most logical thing, which was buy 3 Narsets. And go from there. And
most logical thing.
Most logical thing.
Yeah.
Buy cards when they are at their highest price and cannot possibly return to that point.
I mean, I wanted to. I wanted to play with Narset, and
you could have done what I did and just went out and bought 2 boxes and hoped you opened 2 Narsets.
That's even worse.
That's way worse.
It worked out perfectly because I have all these commons and uncommons now too. So
yeah,
I think we have a new most logical decision.
I have not seen anybody who's opened a box be happy with what they've opened.
I was happy.
My
Narsets.
I mean, there's a lot of cards that have jumped up in price since the Invitational too. So
Death Mist Raptor, is it still really high?
Yeah,
it's ridiculously high.
Ojutai
jumped up. The red
was like $5 or something. I remember like I opened one at pre-release and I was like, no, thank you.
I sold my pre-release promo for $30 of the Ojutai.
I think that's fine.
Well, hell yeah, it's fine. I'm super okay with that. I essentially got a free pre-release now.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. And then
I'm being forced at gunpoint to admit that it was not my Ojutai. It's my girlfriend's because she actually won PAX and I scrubbed out. So I'm legally required to tell you that it was not my Ojutai.
The good old judges aren't good at magic.
I tried to take credit for it, and I got shot down. Tried to pretend like I beat somebody. She was like, shut up. I'm like,
you were good at judging people, though, right? So I played Esper Control. I went, I actually went 2-2, on Saturday and 2-2 on Sunday. And I had some really bad matchups against Mono Red and against Teemer. And those are two matchups that, like, everybody knows that Mono Red just kind of, like, has an awesome matchup against control decks. But Teemer actually has a really good matchup against control decks as well. As, Shaheen Sirani has stated, if you listen to his interview on MTG Focus this week. So, I am in the process of testing it out, trying to make these matchups a little bit better. But I think the deck is very strong. I got to play with Narset this week, guys, and let me tell you, she is insane. Shaheen came out and said that Narset is a better Planeswalker in this standard than Jace the Mind Sculptor was in his standard. And I am very close to agreeing with him because you honestly have not lived. You haven't lived until you've rebound a Dig Through Time.
No, I get it. Like, it's amazing. The upside is enormous. The upside is definitely bigger than Jace. Like, when she hits a home run, she hits a home run. And when you rebound Dig, your opponent loses the turn that that happens. Because it's pointless. Like, if you're going to look at 14 cards of your library and choose the best four, then that game's over. But she's not as consistently good as Jace. You're a heathen. You should be locked up and administered lashings for daring to ever say something.
I don't know, man.
So
I think she's
about our Lord and Savior.
She's so good. I also was able to ultimate her a couple of times. One time was against a blue-white control deck. It was the guy just scooped. He's like, I don't have any creatures in this deck, so we're done here. And then another time was against a guy that has taught himself to never concede any game against control. So he just was a glutton for punishment because I got to the point to where I had the game locked, and instead of wanting to go to game two or three with him, I just kind of dirtled around until I ran the clock out because he didn't want to scoop, and then I beat him. So it's been really, really fun. I really like the deck, and I can't wait to play with it some more. Now, I don't know what I'm going to be playing at the regional PTQ. It's coming up already in about 4 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and I'm on the fence. But Esper Control seems like a good contender for me, so I'm hoping that I can come down to a solid deck list. I'll be testing online with it. I'm going to be testing in person with it, and I have other people that are testing the deck, like you guys, that are going to give me your feedback, and hopefully we can come up with a solid 75 for me to take, and then I can report back to you guys and let you know how I do.
So here's my take on Narset. I want to just give you my rundown so far, because I've been trying her in the Jeskai kind of, I don't know what you would call it, a Jeskai burn mid-range kind of the list.
Yeah.
She doesn't really do it in that kind of list, I've noticed. It's kind of a shame, because I thought, you know, the minus two stoking and then getting it back, but when she comes down, it's never really what I want to be doing. And maybe my list is wrong because I'm running 14 creatures, so, I mean, maybe she's just not good in that kind of list. Well, I guess that's probably my answer right there. But another person's been putting – you've been putting a lot of work into Esper as well.
Yeah, I went on a more of a Super Friends build, running Ashiok and Sorin and Narset and Elspeth, and I kind of tend to agree with Eric on the power level of Narset. Every time I draw a Sorin, I just wish it was a Narset. She's just so good. I've stabilized at one life and then ultimated her, and the game's over from that point.
She ultimates really fast too, I feel.
Yeah.
She's so good. And then, like, the plus one on Narset is very relevant. It's just basically plus one draw card.
Yeah, with all the Scrylands, I mean, you set it up where you're gonna draw a card.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, she's really, really good. But, I mean, I could spend a whole episode just talking about how good Narset is and how good I found out she was over the weekend. But let's move on. We have some Magic news announcements to talk about. And later on in this episode, we have a big announcement regarding the podcast and the future of the podcast. So,
I'm pregnant.
That's not the announcement. Also, no.
Not really surprising at this point.
So, in the news this week, we got Tempest Remastered. The full spoiler is out. What do you guys think about this?
I I'm excited for people that want to play Omnitel, because they just got, like, all their cards for really cheap now. Except for, I think, the fact that Omniscience is, like, $30.
Yeah.
But, do you want me to give them the whole rundown on it?
Yeah, why don't you give us some quick hits of awesome cards that are getting reprinted?
All right, I'll do that. So, the set's going to be released on MTGO on May 6th, and it's on, like, the whole events are going to go through May 27th. So, that's pretty cool. It says each booster is going to retail for $3.99, so that's going to be probably fall around 3-point-something ticks on bots. I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about bots. Now that I just have a really good, like, moment.
Like, are you scared of robots, or do you think that there's some reason why you can't talk about Motobots?
I don't know. When you buy Magic cards, do you own that digital image? Shit's deep. Everybody's quiet.
I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
What question are you asking?
Everyone
is quiet.
I'll come back to you guys on this. I'm curious now. It makes sense to me. Anyway,
are they allowed to do what they do?
Yeah, are you allowed to do what you please with your digital image? It's yours, correct?
What do you mean, the digital image?
The cards are yours. These digital images of cards are yours.
Sure.
Okay.
I don't know, because the only way for you to access them is on a client owned by Wizards of the Coast, right? So how much do you own something that you can only access from one point?
Interesting.
It's getting too deep. Go back to Tempest Remastered.
Come back! We took the wrong pill.
You fell down the rabbit hole way too hard.
Alright, so some really good reprints that we have in Tempest is... I'll just knock the first one out of the way, the one that everybody wanted. We have a Wasteland reprint. Woo! So that's not going to be $100 anymore. We're going to see Oath of Druids, City of Traitors, Dream Halls, Lotus Petal, Mox Diamond, and Intuition. I put Crystalline Sliver on there because there was kind of a need for Crystalline Slivers, and the prices were starting to go up on it. It's kind of a weird card, but I guess people that like Pain and play EDH want it on Moto and
Legacy Slivers.
Legacy Slivers, yeah, for whatever. Whoever plays that. I like that deck.
It's better than Merfolk.
So, yeah, it's just a bunch of decks, or a bunch of cards for show and tell. Are you guys excited? Look at the draft format. Looks like it's going to be fun.
I do remember Will committing to drafting Tempest Remastered a couple of times with us on stream, so... I will be doing that with Will for sure. I don't know if I'm very excited about it, only because the only formats I play on Magic Online are Standard, Draft, and Cube. But I'll try this. This is Draft. I have no real reason to keep the cards because I don't plan on playing Legacy Online.
I'll buy them from you. I need some Mox Diamonds.
Okay, so if I open Mox Diamonds,
okay. Don't draft this set with the explicit purpose of just opening Mox Diamonds. That's not... No, the point of this is that you get to play this kind of like best of Tempest block limited format. So you've got what's actually like a decept... Like, if you've never gotten to play with the Sultari... Like, maybe you've played someone's cube that had Sultari support in the white aggro section, but it's kind of a deceptively high power when you're playing a bunch of commons and uncommon creatures with shadow. And so a lot of your creatures are functionally unblockable, but sometimes it's more interesting than when you play them in cube, because in cube, the white Sultari section is usually marked by being the only shadow creatures in the draft format, except that's not actually the case in Tempest Remastered. There are other shadow creatures. You've got really, really high power level counter spells and a lot of those types of cards. Between Spell Blast and Mana Leak being a common, like, there's a lot of control potential. You've got some of the best, like, limited removal spells that we've ever seen. You've got, Diabolic Edict at common. There's just a lot of stuff in this format, also in the vein of buyback, which like really gives you the opportunity to kind of go big and grindy. It's just kind of like one of Magic's best limited formats, but refined and distilled into an opportunity to play it. I mean, if you haven't gotten to play like mono red Kindle aggro before, like that's a really fun deck. It's miserable to play against, but it's a really fun deck to play.
I mean, I have been fortunate enough to draft Tempest, and I didn't like it, but seeing that they've gotten rid of a lot of the bad cards in it, I'm eager to try it again. I mean, it's been a few years since I've drafted with these cards, so I'm willing to give it a second shot. I saw some cards that they're reprinting, like Time Warp and stuff like that, like Mana Leak is in here, so is Counterspell. I mean, there's a lot of good counterspells, and I can, just by looking at the spoilers, I can see some of the archetypes that are going to come, like the Goblin deck is going to be very viable, the Shadow Creature deck is going to be viable, the Sliver deck might be viable. There's a lot of good cards in here that I can see being really good in Limited.
I'm kind of excited, because I think, now, was it this time last year that we got Vintage Masters?
I think we got Vintage Masters like a year and a half ago.
So
no, same time.
Same time, right? Yeah, so then yeah. I'm hoping that we're gonna start seeing a trend in these kind of things coming out for MTGO, which means that they're finally gonna take a better focus on MTGO. And I hope it just becomes like an annual thing where we get a really fun set that comes out and something that helps to get people into Legacy a little bit easier, or Vintage, I guess, if you play Vintage. I don't really know a lot of people that actually have made that jump into Vintage. I know it's getting popular, especially with the Vintage Super League that's been happening. I think they're actually, like, on their end of their season right now. But anyways, I'm super, super stoked, and I really hope this is just the first or second of things to come. So hopefully we'll see more.
Yeah, it looks cool. All right, so another piece of news that came out. Everyone was abuzz on Twitter about a certain topic, and I had to do a little bit of research. I mean, I knew about what was going on already from a couple of years ago, but I had to look up what was going on recently. And so basically, if you don't know, we have to give you a little backstory on it. There's a gentleman by the name of Tristan Sean Gregson, who also goes by TSG, who was affiliated with Channel Fireball at some point a few years ago. And during his time there, he was accused of stealing product and singles from Channel Fireball and selling them for profit. He was let go by Channel Fireball, and basically the company had pressed charges and put on a full investigation, had cops go and raid his house and, you know, look for stuff that had matching barcodes according to their inventory, and all this stuff was going on, and I don't know that anything came from it. Now, I'm not here to give my opinion about the guy because I don't know him. I've only met him once, and he seemed like a nice guy, and I don't know anything about him personally, so I'm not here to give my opinion. I'm just here to report what people mostly know about. So that was a couple of years ago when he got the boot from Channel Fireball. Since then, he had kind of rose a little bit to prominence all over again in the Magic scene. He had been a big advocate of Cube, had been starting to host podcasts, most notably Heavy Meta. So he was doing well for himself again, up until last week, when Channel Fireball actually strong-armed Face-to-Face Games and told Face-to-Face Games that they will not let Face-to-Face Games basically act as a vendor at any of their events unless they end their relationship with TSG. So, unfortunately for him, he had to bow out of hosting that podcast and end the relationship that he had with Heavy Meta and Face-to-Face Games. So, it's kind of sad that this had to happen in order for Face-to-Face to kind of get out there a little bit more, because I love Face-to-Face as a company. They're, if you don't know Face-to-Face, they're a Canadian-based magic company, basically the Canadian equivalent to Star City Games, I would say. But a lot of the guys that I meet are always the same guys every time I go to GP. They're super nice, really funny, and I always have a good time talking to them. I always recommend selling to them because they always give good prices, and these guys are really cool. And even though I'm not an avid listener of Heavy Meta, I am an avid listener of the A-Team, which TSG has been a guest on before and told his side of the story. And it's just kind of disheartening to see how much oppression there is coming from basically like big box magic company and telling them, you know, you gotta end your relationship with this guy, otherwise you can't play with us. I mean, that's not cool. It's not fair. What do you guys think about this?
Well, an important thing that's like happened throughout kind of this whole debacle between TSG and Channel Fireball is that you're only getting select like portions of sides of stories from an individual group. And so Channel Fireball publicly, like their comment was when they decided that he was going to be let go. So when they fired him, that was their comment on the situation. And kind of the big focus of what they talked about in their statement was individual cards. And when TSG has spoken to other people, or when he's mentioned things on other podcasts, he tends to focus on the police finding, not being able to connect the barcodes basically of sealed product he had with sealed product that was allegedly missing from Channel Fireball. So they sometimes seem to be talking about a different problem, even though maybe both of these were issues. I can't help but feel that there's more to this story than like is actively being talked about. And maybe realistically, Channel Fireball will never tell all of the things that are going on. It's odd. I mean, it's kind of odd. Like one of the things that when he was on the A-team, one of the questions that they basically had for them is if Channel Fireball is wrong and you didn't take these things, then why did they kind of maliciously sabotage your reputation? And I think TSG kind of chalked it up to a soured relationship with the owner of Channel Fireball. But for the most part, to me, like my impression was that it was kind of a lingering question. I mean, for a lot of people who knew him or were aware of him, he did a lot of the Magic Top 10 videos that Channel Fireball put out. I think that everybody pretty much took Channel Fireball's word for it, even though obviously he wasn't convicted or charged of any crime. That doesn't mean that he's innocent. That doesn't mean he's guilty. It just means that, you know, well, the reality of magic cards is it's very difficult to prove that somebody stole magic cards from you because, you know, one, like in this specific case, I guess, you know, TSG's Bonfire of the Damned, there's no way to prove that the Bonfire of the Damned and his binder was a Channel Fireball Bonfire of the Damned because they're all just bonfires. So it's a complicated issue, and I don't think that it's going to be resolved. I think that the message loud and clear from Channel Fireball is that despite no charges being pressed against them, they're clearly like not okay with them, and they're still definitely firmly taking a stance that they think that he stole from them, and they don't want to afford vendor space to somebody that they think is kind of like fostering that. And if he won't say I stole from them, and Channel Fireball still believes that he does, then I don't really see an easy resolution to the issue.
Yeah, I don't think that the issue is ever going to get resolved. I mean, the only person that knows for sure is him, and he's not speaking up anytime soon. He said that there was no proof against him, but that's an easy claim to make, right? When magic cards are so hard to track. But I don't know. I just don't like the fact that this guy who may have been ostracized for something that he didn't do. Like, let's take that stance for a minute. Maybe he didn't do it. And he's been ostracized. He's been singled out. He's been basically put up in the noose already by Channel Fireball. And year after year, they keep tightening that noose around his neck to where they're basically strong arming him out of the game that he really enjoys playing. And I don't know, like, if he is innocent of all this, is it fair for Channel Fireball to do this? Like, how would you guys feel if you were put in this position and you knew that you didn't do anything wrong? Let's hear from Adrian and Ed.
So, I don't know. I guess I feel like I can't really draw an opinion because there's just so much like gray area that we don't know. But I guess, I mean, you gotta pay, do your time for if you do the crime kind of thing? Like, but...
Right, but what I'm saying is, like, what, put yourself in the position that he is in right now, and you know for a fact that you didn't do anything wrong. How would you feel? What would you do to try and get yourself out of this jam? Like, what's going through your head? Put yourself in his shoes.
Well, it's definitely unprofessional from Star City Games. Town Fireball. but it's just, there's really not a lot that he can do, right? What can he really do than, like, move forward?
Yeah.
And you can't, because this company's not letting you move forward. At what point is enough is enough, you know?
Yeah, as far as, say we are taking the stance of, I am innocent, I didn't do anything wrong, and now this big company is coming after me, pushing me out of the game. I think, personally, what I would do is I would continue playing with it. Move through all the obstacles that have been put in front of me and continue going on my way. He's obviously been able to join up with other podcasts and join other teams and continue doing what he's doing. So, I mean, I would feel bad, but I would continue doing it.
I think people have to draw their own conclusions too. They have to look at the evidence and see if it matches up and see if it doesn't, but I hope people just don't take Channel Fireball's word for it. I hope they actually look into this guy. I don't know. From anything else that this guy's ever done, has he ever done other things of the same manner?
Well, no. I mean, the only thing was that he had a lot of easy access to Channel Fireball's inventory because he went to pretty much every event that Channel Fireball was acting as a vendor at. And actively working behind the counter selling cards to players. So he had a lot of access to the cards, which is why I think they decided to single him out because, you know, he may or may not, as we said, he may or may not have done this. But I think that Channel Fireball maybe didn't do their due diligence into really looking in to see if it was indeed him. But I don't know. I mean, all I can say is I wish the guy the best of luck. When I met him, he seemed like a really nice guy. I've heard a lot of people say nice things about him, and the people that are talking bad about him are essentially the people that have never met him. They've already just kind of formed their own opinion about the matter without listening to both sides of the stories or having any true facts around to back up anything. So it is what it is, man. We just kind of live in the internet age where people are just ignorant to a lot of things and they just don't care. You know, they're easy to form opinions.
Underground Dojo Fighting Keyboard Warriors.
That's basically what Magic players are on the internet. All right. So let's talk about Star City Invitational. That was a huge tournament that happened this weekend. The first time we get to see Dragons of Tarkir in the new standard. A lot of people tuned in for it. We got to see some pretty sweet cards. We already talked about Shaheen Surani playing a deck that had like 50% new Dragons of Tarkir cards. But let's talk about the rest of the event. Shaheen actually came in at 12th place. Yep, 12th place with his Esper Control deck. And we will post a link to the deck list in the show notes this week. Not like you can't find it yourselves pretty easily. But the winner, the big winner of this event was Jacob Wilson playing Abzan Control with a card that I really liked a lot when we were reviewing the set, which is Sidisi Undead Vizier. I told you guys, this guy is sick. I told you.
What I really like about Sidisi and it really opens up your options as far as sideboard, just having something that can tutor. So instead of having to, say, play 3 Drown in Sorrows in your sideboard, you can just bring 2 in, knowing that any Sidisi you draw is also a Drown in Sorrow or any answer that you need for that particular moment. And I think that's just super powerful.
Yeah, and as you can see in Jacob Wilson's list, there are a lot of one-ofs on his sideboard. particularly due to the fact that he is running two copies of it's basically Demonic Tutor on a stick. I mean, Sidisi's the truth. And Abzan...
No, it's... You're underselling the card. It's not Demonic Tutor on a stick. It's Demonic Tutor on a 4-6 Death Touch stick. Because that's very different from a lot of, like... You know, like, you're talking about Snapcaster Mage's, like, spell on a stick. Well, that's a 2-mana 2-1 body. The thing about this card is that when you sacrifice Satyr Wayfinder to play Sidisi, not only did you tutor, but you also have a card that just beats Siege Rhino in combat, which is not a stick. Like, this is a giant, you know, enormous, undead, death touch baseball bat.
I don't know. As I recall, not very many of you were on the Sidisi hype train like I was.
What? Do you have memory problems?
I'm pretty sure...
Do you have evidence?
I want to hear the audio evidence.
Is there audio evidence?
I remember talking about how this card was a snap include in another archetype we're going to talk about.
This...
And it would probably be in mid-range.
This card is by far one of the standout cards in Dragons of Tarkir. It's been played not only in this deck, it's also in the Sultai deck. And if you look at Reed Duke's deck list, he brought it back. He brought Sexy back. He brought Sultai Reanimator back to win second place. But it is Reed Duke. He is running a really sweet brew. It's like Sidisi Whip of old that we're kind of used to, except we got some new toys with Dragonlord Silumgar. We got a couple of new Sidisis to go with the set of old Sidisis. He's running old school Silumgar too, so he's just got a lot of the new with the old. And, you know, he also has kind of lightened up the load on his sideboard to fit in a lot of one-ofs because of Sidisi. What do you guys have to say about the new format? Like, how's it look to you?
I think that it is moving a little more mid-rangey.
Not again!
Yeah.
Oh no, it's mid-range again. Where have we seen this before?
But I think that's good. I mean, a mid-range is somewhere a good place to start. It allows for the aggressive strategies to take over. And it also allows the control strategies to take over, and then we'll have the whole cycle of standard again. You know, the aggressive strategies are going to be too good, and then it'll push control out. And then the mid-range will come back, and they'll push out the aggro decks. And then it's just that big cycle, and I think it's a healthy standard again.
I'm going to disagree. All right. To me, the whole cycle, when you look at aggro, mid-range, and control... is looking at how aggro decks struggle with mid-range decks because they play like one step slower and one step bigger, and mid-range decks struggle against control decks because they're one step slower and one step bigger. This format has some of the most vibrant mid-range decks we've ever seen because there's a lot of good mid-range strategies, but I think this is why, I mean, Shaheen Serrani's like a super Esper player. But this is like, I think this is why control has not been a mainstay in this format, is because control needs a relatively solved metagame where you can accurately predict what the mid-range decks are going to play and target them with specific answers and not this every mid, like there's so many different mid-range strategies, and like the way that you beat Sultai Reanimator is not the way that you beat Abzan Control, is not the way that you beat Jeskai midrange, and I think that, like, it's healthy because we haven't seen that a lot before, but I think it's definitely the case that, I mean, I'm with you, I love Esper, but, it's hard. These top 8s don't look like control top 8s.
So, routing out the rest of the top 8 for the Invitational, we're looking at Abzan Aggro, piloted by Jason Coleman. We also have Green-White Devotion, which is a deck that we talked about last week, coming in at 4th, piloted by Chris Anderson. Mono Red Aggro pokes its evil head out again, piloted by Michael Braverman.
Just want to give a quick shout out to Michael Braverman for going 16-0 on the in the Swiss portion of the tournament. He did really, really exceptionally well.
Yeah, I mean, Zergo Bellstriker got him there, right?
Well, not that. Not only that, but his...
So he played Modern too, right? Do you know what he played in Modern?
No, Legacy. Legacy.
Oh, Legacy.
He played Shardless Sultai.
Oh, that's a really cool switch. I think you would assume that he would just play Burn in Legacy.
And the rest of the top eight, we have Todd Anderson playing Jeskai Tokens, Joe Bass playing Abzan Control, and Ross Merriam piloting Red Green Aggro. So, I mean, we can see that there are not a lot of control decks, like not a lot of blue-based control decks coming out in the top eight. And I think that's because the blue players are still trying to fine-tune the lists. I know that a lot of people are talking about...
Well, yeah, I mean, it's also a little bit more... It was a little bit more of the obvious archetypes with the new set coming out, so I think people hated on it properly.
I think that could be the case, but I think also, you know, they just haven't found the right variation of control. Like, I was saying, as people are messing around with blue-white, people are still messing with blue-black. Like, Christian Calcano did a lot of good things with blue-black control during the Invitational. And obviously, Sheen Serrani went very well with Esper control. He went 6-2 in the standard portion of the Invitational. So, control's good. It's a very good deck, especially in standard. But at a tournament like the Invitational, you can't just be good at one format. You have to be good at another. So this is where, like, the best of the best, the cream rises to the top, and these are your top standard finishes for this particular tournament. Now, if we look at the standard open that happened the same weekend, we see the list look a little bit different, in that they're a little bit more aggro-based strategies. We have Jeskai Heroic taking first by Joe Lawsett. And then Abzan Aggro in second, Red Green Aggro in third, Green Red Monsters followed by Green White Devotion, and then Jeskai Tokens, Jeskai Aggro, and Red Green Aggro. A lot of very aggressive strategies, but if you continue to look to like the top 16, even more aggro strategies. Red Green, Abzan, Red Green, Jeskai. You know, all of this is like Will was saying, or like Ed was saying, I apologize, that you know, you can see this shift from mid-range and that is going back to mid-range, but the players playing in this particular tournament, they're still on very aggressive routes here, like very fast decks. And I think that this new standard, while it is healthy, people are still trying to find homes for all the new cards. And a lot of these lists, you know, when I was looking at them, some of them aren't even running any new cards. A lot of people are just too scared to play with new cards until the format's a little bit more defined.
And I agree with that. I mean, going back to the Invitational, I hate to go back, but most of the decks in the top eight were already archetypes that had established themselves in the metagame. And they just picked and chose the new cards, the new toys to play with, to fill in the little holes. And I expected to see that with the better players, the Invitational players. They're going to try and do that.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. But let's move on from looking at these deck lists, and we're going to sharpen the tools a little bit. We're going to focus on our deck spotlight, and this week we're going to be talking about Sultai Whip. Now, Will, I know this is a deck that you really wanted to talk about, right?
This makes me feel like Todd is still a thing sometimes.
Okay, so I gave us the rundown on the deck last week. Why don't you take over this week? Lay it on us. What can we do if we want to play with Sultai Whip, and what can we do to prepare against it?
So, obviously, if you're not familiar with the archetype, the shell is basically your big four ofs are Seder Wayfinder, Sylvan Caritid, Course of Krufix, classic green stuff. But you care about the graveyard, you play Sidisi Blood Tyrant, because you're also playing Whip of Erebos and a lot of interesting creatures that are either good in your graveyard or really strong reanimate targets. The deck has changed with the release of Dragons of Tarkir. Probably the most notable changes that we saw Reduke. I'm comparing Reduke's list to a list that Masa Tokutome placed the top eight in an open before Dragons came out. But the changes in the main board that Reduke chose to, basically the big new inclusions are the also playing two copies of the new Sidisi, which I've mentioned previously is a snap include in this deck, but also playing Dragonlord Silumgar and playing Silumgar the Drifting Death in place of playing Doomwake Giant, and the inclusion of Tasigur the Golden Fang, which I think is kind of a logical place to take this, because sometimes in a strategy you can put a lot of cards in your graveyard, and I think Reed Duke came to the conclusion that he wanted more Delve cards than just Murderous Cut, so he wanted to also include another Delve threat in the strategy, and I think it's just another, the latest greatest example of Tasigur pretty much creeping into every strategy. Those are the big, some of the cards that used to be in this deck in the main board, like Farika or Sultai Charm. Reduke played them in the side, and it still has those Doomwakes that we've seen before. A lot of times at Invitationals, people are not like 100% sure where they want to be in the list, but those are the big things that this list has picked up. Obviously, I mentioned on a previous cast, but Sidisi, Brood Tyrant on turn 4 or 3, if you've played a Karatid, and then following up old Sidisi with, or like alternate universe Sidisi with this universe Sidisi, Undead Vizier is an incredible curve because you just exploit one of your 2/2 zombie tokens, and then you proceed to tutor, frequently tutoring up something like Whip of Erebos. Reduke's also only down to 2 whips instead of 3 or 4, which you'd seen before, so a little less reliant on that strategy. So that's kind of like general overview of like what Sultai is and like what Sultai is doing differently than it'd been doing in the past.
All right, so if someone wants to play with the deck, Will, what is the general overview of what they should be doing on their turns? And then alternatively, if someone is playing against this deck, what should they be looking out for? What should they be doing against the deck?
So the little engine that you could, that the card that this deck gets more mileage out of than pretty much any other deck in the format, is Satyr Wayfinder, because hitting your land drops is really important, and by virtue of the fact that this deck plays Sylvan Karatid, 4 Karatids, 4 Corsair of Kruphix, and 4 Satyr Wayfinder, this deck also gets to play 23 land instead of maybe 24 or 25. That's really desirable in this list because you want to reduce the land count if you can, and it also lets you play more creatures because it's really important to have creatures in your yard. I mean, you need just a raw volume of cards in your graveyard, but preferably they're creatures. But Satyr Wayfinder does like double duty in this deck. It hits land drops, which is important in a 23 count deck like this. It puts the other cards into your graveyard, and now another thing that it does is it leaves behind a small body that you can exploit with Sidisi, Undead Vizier. So it's doing even more than it did before. It's really important when you play aggro decks because it can gum up the ground, it can chump block, it can do a reasonable job of buying you a turn or just holding something back maybe, even though that most of the time he's just going to chump. But he does a good job of making sure you consistently hit your land drops when you need to, but also getting things going into the graveyard. Obviously, like, one of the big 4-ofs that, like, makes this deck different from other ones is Sidisi, Brood Tyrant. She puts in a lot of pressure on your opponent. Very frequently, the turn that you play this card, you're paying 4 mana for a 3-3 and a 2-2, because if you mill 3 cards into your library, your deck is 26 creatures, so you're, you know, more than likely, you're going to hit at least a creature there. And then every time Sidisi attacks, you get that trigger again. So you're continuing to put things in the graveyard. You're continuing to basically play efficiently costed cards. And then you have the kind of like soft reanimate package or some good ways to go over the top. Whether it's Hornet Queen, Soul of Innistrad, Torrent Elemental, Dragonlord Silumgar, or Silumgar the Drifting Death, you have a couple of like finisher cards, kind of around 4 or 5. But because you play Whip of Erebos, you can be a little more selective. Like maybe you're in a matchup where Hornet Queen is the best finish. Maybe you're in a matchup where, you know, you want Silumgar the Drifting Death. Your opponent's on tokens and you want to whip out a hexproof strategy, or a hexproof like token hoser. It's kind of like a little bit more versatile, and it's got that kind of feel of being able to grab things. And Ed mentioned earlier that all the copies of Sidisi are extra copies of your sideboard. When you're playing against Sultai, there's a couple of like general advice that I give, and then some kind of like cute little tricks. Obviously, the cutest thing that you can do in this format is to Jeskai Charm Sidisi Brood Tyrant. Obviously, because if you play her, she can mill herself away. But the big thing with this strategy is that you need to constantly pay attention to what cards are in your opponent's graveyard, because in many ways, in a deck that plays Tasker and Whip of Erebos, the graveyard is loosely kind of like a hand. And so you want to be able to be aware that those cards are not gone and never coming back, that there's a reasonable likelihood that you could see some of those cards, like they could whiff and play them back out. You want to be mindful of like how your opponent's developing. If you dirtle and you don't apply a lot of pressure to this deck, it's going to basically like start filling and filling and filling its graveyard. But similarly speaking, if you know that this deck is only going to kill you with one of those big cards, like let's say you know that they're only likely to kill you with Silumgar, or they're only likely to kill you with Hornet Queen or something, but like only one of the top end cards is how you're going to die, and you're not going to die to 3/3s or 2/2s. Like the Sidisi Root is not going to be a threat to you because you're playing Siege Rhino, or you're playing a control deck and you have small removal spells for those things. Then you need to be mindful that like there are only 4 or 5 of those finisher cards, and on Reed Duke's list now there's 2 Whip of Erebos. So those are the cards that they need to win the game. So sometimes, like, if you can cycle through things like Crux of Fate and you can just drag the game out as a control player, and just know that your counter spells or the things that you're fighting over are whips, actual finishers, or Thoughtseize, then you know, like, what is important, and that the ground stuff is less important. Because chances are, like, if you pay attention to that, then, you know, hopefully Sidisi doesn't just like outright kill you in the first place. Obviously, a lot of that has changed with Sidisi Undead Vizier, because normally that's not a card that we want to let our opponents get obvious value from. It's a judgment call. I think that sometimes if somebody plays Sidisi Undead Vizier with only one creature on the board, I think there's sometimes when it might be reasonable to like kill the creature in response and then let your opponent decide whether or not they want to pay 5 mana and tutor, or if they want to pay 5 mana and keep the body around. But it's definitely a deck that it's got a good mid-range strategy. It can be really punishing for aggro decks, because if you're playing the aggro deck from that perspective, you need to be aware of the fact that most of these finishers are really bad for you. Like Silumgar the Drifting Death, Dragonlord Silumgar, certainly not Tauren Elemental, but Hornet Queen, Doomwake Giants in the sideboard, and the ever-presence of Whip of Erebos, and then just Sidisi, Brood Tyrant herself. They're all really bad for you. So aggro, close it out quickly, control, just pay attention to the stuff that like really matters. Don't get like freaked out because they played like 3 drops or 4 drops.
Awesome. Okay, so we hope that those of you who are listening feel a little bit more prepared to either play with Sultai Whip or play against Sultai Whip. So stay tuned for more sharpening the tools and our deck spotlight in the future. But let's move on to our last topic of the night, and that is spike tips. We actually missed out on a good spike tip last week, so we wanted to bring it to you this week. We actually have a submission from Squealing Dead, who was on Adrian's Twitch page, right, Adrian?
He was. Thanks for watching, Mr. Or Miss Squealing Dead. I guess an avid listener to the podcast, which is a big thank you from all of us. Makes me happy.
It makes all of us happy.
It does. I love it. I love when people talk back to us when instead of us just always talking to them.
Right? It's always great to hear this feedback. So, Adrian, I'm going to let you answer this question, but I'm going to read it out for everyone that's listening to hear. Squealing Dead writes, I will be attending my first FNM this week in my city. I'm a little nervous about making the jump over from playing with my friends at home to playing in a store with people I have never met before. What should I expect, and what should I look out for? What was your experience playing in your first event? Sorry, this might not be much of a Spike question. Also, I would like to give a big thank you for Will for talking about his cube last week. I am in the process of making mine right now, and it's cool to hear different ideas, and I looked into some of the resources you had mentioned. So, shout out to Will real quick. But let's go back to Squealing Dead's question. First FNM ever, outside of playing with friends, what are we going to do? So, Adrian, start it out.
Go super hostile. Make sure that when people talk to you, you are really short with them. No, I'm just kidding.
No, you don't want to do that.
I'm being funny. No, go with like an open mindset. I mean, listen, just play your game. Have fun. I guess what made me nervous when I first started playing like in tournaments and stuff is that I didn't know how to play the game correctly. And that people would get really mad at me for maybe like doing things wrong or, you know, just like not knowing how to do phases and stuff. Like that made me nervous. So what I did is I just kind of read up on like how all the steps worked. And I actually carried, do you remember those little like cards they used to give you that had like all the steps on it? I had that with me and I would carry that with me so I knew. But, like, I say you go to, like, 2 or 3 FNMs, and I bet you'll meet some great people out there, and you'll probably end up meeting up with them outside of FNM and start playing with them a little bit more. It just depends on your personality type, if you're, like, an introvert or not, you know, or is it outrovert?
Extrovert.
Extrovert. An outrovert, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, just do it, man. Go out there. Go play. That's one of the best things about this game is that it's a social game. It's real fun to be sitting there with a bunch of other nerds that have the same kind of interests as you. So go for it, Squealing Dead. And thanks for listening to the podcast. I just want to throw that in again. But all right, anybody else?
I think that the big thing that you got to hit is that kind of by design, Friday Night Magic is supposed to be a lot of people's, it's for a lot of people, it's your first exposure to like Magic in a tournament. So if you're going to a place that you've never played before, introducing yourself to somebody, or I think one of the best ways to kind of like foster that development is to just like get out the binder and try and trade with people, because it forces you to interact with people and it'll give you an impression of them. Even if you're just kind of like moving around cards in a circle, like it's, I think that's a cool way to like get to know people, and you have to speak with them, as opposed to like sometimes we as Magic players are just absurdly antisocial and we don't talk to our opponents at all. But if you trade with somebody, then, you know, sometimes it has to happen.
Yeah, I agree with Will completely. You know, going out, FNM is fun. That's the whole point of FNM. It's kind of an intro into tournament Magic. So if you have that mindset going in that I'm going to have fun and just put a positive spin on it, that's what's going to happen. You're going to have fun. You're going to introduce yourself. You're going to meet new Magic players that maybe they'll want to go back to your place with your friends and play tabletop Magic there in the kitchen or what have you. I remember my first FNM. I was super nervous because the only thing I did was play EDH in the kitchen and hang out with friends. I had never drafted before. And that was our tournament structure. So, you know, I went in and I built a 60-card deck out of my cards, and I didn't know what I was doing, and I got destroyed every game. But it was so much fun, and I kept going back.
Well, they don't call it Fun Day Night Magic for a reason.
That was terrible.
I'm sorry.
Awful. You should just be ashamed of yourself.
I'm going up. I'm leaving.
All right. So let me give you my story of my first FNM. So I started playing Magic because all my friends who were playing Pokemon shifted over to playing Magic. And we all kind of played at the same local game store anyway. And we were all just kind of playing there. But that store didn't have sanctioned Magic the Gathering tournaments because they just didn't. You know, people were starting to get into it. But we had found a local shop in Las Cruces that did. And so we wanted to go check it out. And some of my other friends had already been there a couple times before, and I hadn't, and I finally decided to make the trip out there to Las Cruces to check it out and see what it was all about. And it was my first time ever going to Cruces to play Magic, and I went to a shop called Hidden Treasures, and it was owned and run by a gentleman by the name of Jim Finstrom. So if you are a part of this local community here in New Mexico, El Paso, you obviously know who Jim is, and he's a super nice guy. And he made it really easy for me because he was super friendly, very inviting. I told him that it was my first time there, but a couple of my buddies had been there before already. They told me about his place, and he was very welcoming. And when I got there, I got to meet a lot of other cool players that I have formed relationships with, friendships, not like those kind of relationships.
I don't know, man.
Like, no, but I formed a lot of awesome friendships with. So players like Raul Fernandez and Josh Mitchell, Sam Sanders, rest in peace. You know, these guys, were guys that every time I would go to Cruces, I would just hang out with all the time and have fun along with the local guys from El Paso. And this all started because one day we decided to stop playing in the back room of a video store, which is what our local game store was at the time, and move over to an actual card shop and play FNM. And it was really, really cool. Now, at this time, I wasn't by any means a competitive player. I was still very much on the casual side because I was still learning how to play the game and everything. And I went and, you know, I didn't win very many matches, but it was still a lot of fun because I made a lot of really cool friends. And so, you know, back to what these guys were saying, is that that's what FNM is about, just going out there, meeting new people, learning to play the game a little bit more, and just having fun. And ultimately, that's what we're here to do, is to have fun. And I say it all the time on the cast, and I'll continue to say it, because that's the whole goal of this game, is you want to have fun and hang out with your friends. And, you know, because of this experience going to my first FNM in Las Cruces and building these friendships with these people from Las Cruces, I would never have met you guys that I cast with today. Think about that. And this was many, many, many years ago. So this podcast was just brewing many years in the making.
They didn't even have the internet when you were young.
No, they didn't. They didn't.
You're like 68 years old. So like the first time you played Magic, you were like 12. Yeah, there was no internet.
They were like passing deck lists to each other with smoke signals.
Dude, is he smoke decking again?
Can you imagine? You like you smoke signal back to someone like half an hour later. You're like, okay, probably like 31 or 32 puffs into your signals. Was that like 3 intuition or was it 4 intuition?
All right.
The whole signal.
Ooh, you're old.
I'm not that old. We didn't have the internet, but we had Scry Magazine. That's something you youngins don't know about.
Nope, I got Star City Games.
What's a magazine?
Oh man. Hey, Ed, you're just about as old as I am. Quit playing.
Nobody is as old as you. Yeah. Don't try and make yourself feel better.
Alright, so my advice to Squealing Dead is go have fun. Give it a chance. Even if you don't like it the first time around, go back again. Make some friends. Just have fun with it, man. That's all I can say is just have a good time. Be very open-minded and just play the game that you love. You know, you're obviously thinking about going to FNM for a reason. You want to expand your horizons with the game. FNM's the perfect way to do it. So thank you for your submission. Thank you for listening. And thank you for loving Will and his cube so much.
I hate Will and his cube.
Jealous.
All right. So we teased it at the beginning of the episode. And the time has finally come. We have a big announcement for you guys. So...
This is it. Oh, I'm so excited.
Are you excited? Are you guys excited to tell everyone?
I am super excited.
Ed's pretty excited. What about you, Will? Are you excited, Will?
So excited.
He doesn't sound excited. No. But I guarantee you he is. So, here's the announcement. Are you ready for it? We here at the Mana Spike Podcast have decided to team up with MTG Focus. So, if you guys remember, they are friends of the show, Roberto Gonzalez, his wife Erica Gonzalez, as well as Roberto's co-host, Brandon Remley. We are teaming up with them because they have started a venture in branding out the MTG Focus brand. They've built a website. They're going to host a bunch of other podcasts and a lot of additional Magic content for all you listeners to listen to. So we have decided to team up with them, and we are joining them in their efforts to bring you all additional Magic content, additional quality Magic content. Now, what that means is that we are not going anywhere from MTGcast. We will still stay on MTGcast, but we will have a new name. So are you ready for this new name?
It's called MTG Adrian.
No, that's not the new name.
What?
Yep, MTG Adrian.
The new
MTG
name...
MTG Adrian.
No, God, I hate that.
The new name will be MTG Focus Spikes. How do you guys feel about that?
Well, I lobbied long and hard for Beep Boop Magic, but...
If it can't be MTG Adrian.
Yeah, it's way better than MTG Adrian.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm actually really excited to be joining them. We are going to be joining the MTG Focus family. We have so much in store for the future that, you know, we just can't wait to share with you guys, but it'll all come in due time. So, this is the last official episode of the Mana Spike Podcast. However, we are not going anywhere. You can still find us here at the MTGcast Network, on MTGcast, and additionally on MTGFocus.com and their RSS feed. We will now be under MTG Focus Spikes. So that's what we wanted to announce to you guys. Everything's staying the same. The format of the show is going to be a little restructured, but basically the same. We're going to have all your same favorite hosts. It's going to be myself, Adrian, Will, and now Ed. I mean, I'm super pumped and super excited for the future.
This is awesome.
You can hear it in his voice. He's trying not to squeal.
I'm really excited. This is cool because we're all moving forward together, and I look forward to giving higher quality content. And I think this is the best way for us to do it.
I agree with you completely. So, that's it for this episode, guys. I mean, this is the last of the Mana Spike Podcast. What?
Yeah, I quit. I'm out of here.
Well, you're gonna be back next week.
Yeah, probably. It's a love-hate relationship with you guys.
Well, we love to hate you, Adrian.
Well, I just hate you guys.
And we love that.
All right, so I don't have anything else. Do you guys have anything else before we depart?
Thanks for the support. And thanks for coming to the stream for like the last few weeks. That's super cool. And thank you to... Who else should we say thank you to? Eric, name somebody.
I mean, to everyone. We want to thank Roberto and Brandon for giving us this opportunity. Everyone at the MTG Focus headquarters. And, you know, most importantly, the fans and the listeners. We would not be able to have this opportunity without you guys. So thank you all so much. We promise you we are still going to be bringing you the same content that you love and enjoy. It's just going to be under a new name, under a new branding, and that's it. So, you know, stay tuned for that. We hope that you check us out. You can still contact us the same way. I'm at MrE234, all one word, on Twitter. Adrian is still at the Bedroom Casters on Twitch, and I think he's gonna have a Twitter soon, right, Adrian?
Oh, man.
William Hendricks is still HK is not Korea on Twitter. And Ed, where can we find you, Ed?
I am on Twitter at 44Edward.
Hot Edward for you.
that is not, well, I mean, that's not my name, but I've
definitely been tweeting at that account, so I don't know who to talk to.
Oh, that's how I have been missing all your tweets, Will.
So you can find us all there. You can still reach us for the rest of this week on our regular pages, on the Facebook page, the Twitter page, the Twitch page if we are streaming. But moving forward, we're going to do a name changeover to MTG Focus Spikes, so don't be surprised one day when you see it and you're like, hey, this isn't Mana Spike, this is something else. Don't worry, it's still us, we just have a new name. And that's really it. I mean, you're still going to be able to submit your Spike tips to us. Anything else that you want to hear from us, we're definitely open to it. But not only that, we're going to have some awesome guests lined up for you. So we're already in talks with a few people that we think that you listeners will really enjoy. So please, please stay tuned for more. And with that, everyone, that is the last episode of the Mana Spike podcast. Thank you all very much, and we'll see you all next week.
I'm sad now. But happy!
But sad.
But happy.